Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. I want to give a quick shout out to the band Liebecker. They provide intro music and music throughout the show. We appreciate everything they do for us. You can find them at www.liebeckermusic.com. You can also find them on Twitter at Liebecker Music, Facebook, Spotify, wherever you get your music, iTunes, anywhere you're going, please check them out. They're a great band from the Great Northwest. We'd love to see them get some more fans. They have millions of them, but they can always use a million more. And speaking of guys that can use a million more fans and deserve a million more fans, I want to bring in my special co-host for the evening. This is Bryant Knox of Oregon Sports News. He's been on the show a few times, but it's never enough because we always want him on for one more or two more or 10 more. So we're very excited to have him back. Haven't talked basketball with him since the finals happened. That seems like years ago, maybe decades. So Bryant, where have you been? What have you been up to? It's been a long time, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Casey. You know, I can't divulge all of my whereabouts.
But you're an international man of mystery, you know.
Something about too much of a good thing comes to mind, so show up every now and again. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we appreciate you having you on. You're an expert when it comes to the NBA, and I won't hear a word against it. So let's dive right into an Around the Association segment here. And let's talk specifically Portland Trailblazers. There was a trade that happened this week. We didn't really get a ton in return. I mean, we got a ton if you're talking cash. But as far as players you can put on the court, nothing really happened. So Allen Crabb gets traded for what amounts to a salary dump. And Portland is now closer to the luxury tax than they were before. They're still over the luxury tax, but not nearly as much as they were previously. What are your thoughts on the trade? Is it good for Portland? Is it good for Brooklyn? Is it good for both? What does this do for Allen Crabb? What are your thoughts on that?
I think, first of all, the trade caught a lot of people off guard. I think that, you know, the Blazers have been in the rumor mill so much this summer. I mean, probably more than most summers, because they started out the summer with three draft picks, and basically everybody knew they weren't going to make three draft picks, so you expected some sort of trade there, and one happened to move up. But you didn't get the Paul George return or anything like that that I think a lot of people expected. Then there was all the talk about Carmelo Anthony, and yes, that talk is still going on, but no, the Blazers are not going to get Carmelo Anthony. So I think that amidst all the rumors, you know, one thing that really, really people didn't think too much about was a salary dump. And so when it happened, I think even though it made a ton of sense, it caught people off guard. Now, that said, I think in the short term, you probably don't get any better. I don't think ditching Allen Crabb for essentially nothing does anything for you as of this upcoming season. But what I think is important to note about the trade is that, yes, I think it's with something else in mind, but no, I don't think it's with something else in mind immediately. I think that the fact that Portland got a trade exception back is important, because now if they want to make a midseason trade before the deadline next year, they can now have an extra weapon to do that. I think that this trade was mostly made, though, with Yusuf Nurkic in mind. I think that this deal was designed to not only get them closer to that luxury tax, but also make sure that they are not putting themselves in a horrible financial or an even more horrible financial situation when it comes time to extend Yusuf Nurkic's contract. I think that he has made it very clear he wants to be here. Portland has made it very clear that he is a big time part of the future at this point. And so making sure that you can sign him without being further strapped to the cash, you're putting yourself in a much better situation.
And as far as Crabb moving on to the team that signed him to an offer sheet last summer, do you think that was just a year in advance of what we were supposed to see? Do you think Portland should have held on to him? What was your knee-jerk reaction when you heard about the trade?
I think Portland made the right decision a year ago to match that salary. I think that there was an expectation that he was going to elevate his game more than he did. And B, you know, in the current climate of the NBA and its salary situation, that is no longer all-star money. I know even 3-4 years ago that was all-star money that he signed for, but when Portland made that signing, it was with the understanding that that all of a sudden is role player money. Right. And so I don't knock Neil Olshey or the Trailblazers for making the decision to retain a nice young piece that has the potential to become, you know, at least a lights out shooter, at best a, you know, solid rotation guy. I think that Portland did make the right decision to keep him, but I think they also made the right decision to get rid of him. Kind of funny how 1 year can make that difference. I do find it very poetic that Brooklyn is the one that traded for him. And I think that Alan Crabb did something really interesting by waiving his trade kicker. You know, I didn't do the math to figure out how much more he would have made by being traded, but I think there was some sort of goodwill play there because he knows that, you know, the Brooklyn Nets are the organization that got him his current money. So they not only showed, you know, faith in him back then, they showed faith in him once again this year by saying, hey, we weren't just trying to screw over the Trailblazers. We have no interest in doing that. Our interest is in having you on our roster and developing you as a player. And so I found it very interesting that it all sort of came together that way.
So now who steps up for the Blazers? I mean, this is the second sixth man they've traded away in the last few years. The first one would have been Will Barton, who was a pretty popular sixth man. And now you have Alan Crabb, obviously an even more popular sixth man. Portland keeps trading away some of its more talented young shooters. What does this do for the roster going forward? Who's going to step up into the sixth man role? Is that going to be an Evan Turner, a Mo Harkless? Who's going to step and be the wing that comes in and put some minutes on the court when CJ or Dame need a break?
Yeah, I think it's probably Evan Turner. I think Harkless probably lands the starting three spot this year. Aminu will, assuming Stotts still wants to play a small ball style, he'll be at the four again, which means Evan Turner will probably be the first off the bench for a guy like Harkless. I like Harkless's game. I don't think he's ever going to become a consistent third scorer. And not that I think Evan Turner will either, but with Evan Turner, you know a little bit more of what you're getting. And yes, he struggled for long stretches last year, but he also dealt with an injury. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt that there's more to see from him. Now, I think Harkless overall can become a better, more well-rounded player also. I just think Evan Turner, if Terry Stotts uses him right, and by that I mean put the ball in his hand as sort of a de facto point when either CJ McCollum or Damian Lillard are on the bench, and let him create as opposed to have him play that Alan Crabb role, which was a stand in the corner, sort of Martell Webster type role. I think that if he's used that way as a creator, he can definitely step up his game to a level that people didn't see a year ago.
And I think that solves their problem with their wings. I mean, they had Crabb, they had CJ, they had Dame, but then after that, you know, Turner was out for a lot of last year, so was Aminu. Harkless had ups and downs. There really wasn't a guy that you could just plug in and set as your starting small forward, or even your starting six, or not your starting six man, but your first guy off the bench in the backcourt. If that's going to be Turner or Harkless now, I think that's definitely good for them to know that going in, instead of like last year playing the question mark game for a good portion of the year. But now knowing that it's probably going to be one of those guys, is that good enough for you, or do you want to see them use this freedom they have in the cap space, or not cap space, but they're almost near the luxury tax? You want to see them stay there, maybe even get under, or should they now use the trade exception to go get another veteran?
Well, I personally don't try to think too much about the luxury tax. Not to sound ignorant to how it works or shallow about it, but quite frankly, it's not my money.
It's not your checkbook. Yeah, it's a good way to think about it.
I am a fan and an analyst, and I am not writing the checks. So if Paul Allen and Neil Olshey decide that they want to get under that tax, you know, I can't judge them for that. You can be the richest man in the world, but a dollar is a dollar. And right. So I think that I can't judge them for trying to get down to it. But like I said, I think that what I know about Paul Allen is that money is rarely, if ever, an issue, even in basketball land. Like, this dude loves to cut the check for big-time players. And so I think that having that trade exception is not by accident. I think that the Blazers would be more than willing to, you know, do some sort of trade like they tried to do with Paul George. If there's a player out there this next season who is maybe disgruntled, maybe in a contract year, and a team is not sure they're going to be able to retain him or want to retain him, I think that's when the Blazers can throw a young piece like a Mo Harkless, or I don't know. There's probably not any other, you know, young high upside players on the Blazers at this point. Maybe you know Vonleh or Swanigan or something. But you could swing one of those guys for a guy with a much bigger contract, take that back, absorb it into the the trade exception. And to me, I still think that makes a ton of sense because, no, I don't think the Blazers are anywhere near contention right now. Off the top of my head, I struggle even fitting them into the top eight out West just because of how ridiculous of a gauntlet it is. Right. Now, I can pretty easily be convinced that they'll make the playoffs, but I think that if they do, it's going to be scrounging for one of those final two spots. And I can't picture Neil O'Shea or Paul Allen being satisfied with that.
Yeah, I can't either, especially, you know, even in the short term, I can't see them thinking that that's going to be good enough. When you have a team that was supposed to be in rebuilding mode 2 years ago and blew everybody away, and then last year they didn't blow everybody away, but they kind of did in March and then still made the playoffs. I think now if you miss the playoffs, even if your competition is so much better, which it absolutely is, the fans and the executives are going to point the finger at a team that maybe underwhelmed versus some pretty overwhelming expectations. I mean, there's plenty of fans that are thinking this team has the potential to be top five, top six in the West. I'm not sure they're that great. I think they'll be struggling to get in those 7 and 8 playoff spots, like you said. But I don't think that Paul Allen and Neil Olshey and Terry Stotts are going to think that's good enough very long, maybe 1 year. But after that, they're going to look for a team and a bunch of players that can actually do the job if this one can't.
I agree, because the thing is, the Blazers aren't rebuilding at this point. You know, this isn't a summer where we saw four of the five starters leave like we did a couple summers ago. This is a team that has now, for the most part, been together for a few seasons. Now, we have yet to see what an entire year of Yusuf Nurkic looks like, and I know that I'm excited to see what that looks like. I think that based on the games that he played last year, the success was a little bit unsustainable. I think that he's going to be very, very good in Portland's system, and I think that he's going to be a difference maker a lot of the times. I just don't think he's going to be as good or you know, as impactful over the course of an entire season, because one, small sample sizes, you know, have a tendency to have misleading results. But a big part of that is because other teams had not really scouted Nurkic. Nurkic had been pouting on a bench in Denver before he got here, so there was really no need to figure out how to play against him. Now teams are well aware of what he's able to do and how he fits in Portland's system, and teams are going to figure that out. And speaking of teams like Denver, you know, the reason I think Portland struggles to get into the playoffs this year or struggles to really make a name for itself isn't so much about its own roster. I think that in a vacuum, Portland has, you know, a nice makeup, but that's the funny thing about the NBA and the Western Conference is you don't play against nobody. You don't play in a vacuum. You play against teams that are getting better constantly, like a Denver who got Paul Millsap, which I think was one of the best signings of the summer.
Absolutely.
You play against a team like a Minnesota, which really was not in contention for the playoffs last year. Now all of a sudden people are calling them a super team. I don't know if they qualify exactly. If they get Kyrie Irving, they surely qualify as a super team. But I think that they may can move into the playoffs this year. I'm not convinced that the Clippers or the Jazz fall out of the playoffs despite their off-season departures. So that right there means you have two teams in without two teams being out. And so it's like I said, it's the wild, wild west. And I think that Portland needs to do something else if it truly wants to contend.
And that's a great segue into our next segment. And we're going to get there in a minute. We're at the 15-minute mark. So we got to take our first break. Well, our only break, we're only a 30-minute show, but so we'll take a quick break and hear from some sponsors, and then we'll be right back and we'll hear Brian's thoughts on how Portland can become the next super team, or if that's even necessary. You're listening to Fireside Sports on Oregon Sports News. We'll catch you after the break.
Yellow is a grand, exciting treat, a perfect joy to look at, and when it comes to taste, well, there's simply nothing finer. Jell-O adds a glamorous touch to any meal. Gay, sprightly colors, rich, tantalizing flavor, all blended together in a bright, tangy dessert of enticing goodness. So tomorrow night, lend new delight to dinner with a clear, radiant mold of shimmering Jell-O in any one of Jell-O's six delicious flavors. The name Jell-O is a trademark, the property of General Foods. And when you buy, look for those big red letters on the box. That way, you can always be sure of getting the flavor that made Jell-O famous.
Meanwhile, I'd like to ask, are you cheese hungry? You sometimes kind of hanker for a dish of macaroni with real full cheese flavor all through it? Well, then get Kraft Dinner, the new Kraft Dinner, better than ever. In 7 minutes cooking time, this new Kraft Dinner gives you just about the best macaroni and cheese you ever laid fork to. You see, each package of Kraft Dinner gives you a special macaroni that cooks to fluffy tenderness just in boiling water. And there's also plenty of golden Kraft grated, a really magic product. With this Kraft grated, you sprinkle swell cheese flavor through and through that macaroni. With Kraft Dinner, you make top-notch macaroni and cheese as fast as you make the dinner coffee. Try it soon. Folks who are really fussy about macaroni and cheese rave about the new Kraft Dinner. Ask your food dealer tomorrow for several packages of Kraft Dinner.
The instant coffee with a famous flavor. That's Instant Maxwell House, the happiest combination in coffee. Wonderful, good to the last drop flavor, combined with the convenience and thrift of coffee made instantly in the cup. So easy, no pot, no grounds. So thrifty, saves you real money compared to ordinary coffee. So truly good, pure roaster fresh flavor. Try Instant Maxwell House, the instant coffee with a famous flavor. Instantly good to the last drop.
All right, welcome back into Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. I want to welcome back in our guest host, Bryant Knox of Oregon Sports News. Previously, before the break, we were talking about Alan Crabb and how that deal went down. And right before the break, we told you all that we want to talk about how the Blazers can become the next super team. So, Bryant, I want to propose a couple of trade options to you and hear your thoughts on what you think Portland should do and which one is the best option for the team. Not just right now for this season, but also the next couple of years. You ready for that?
Bring it on.
All right. So there's a couple of superstars that are on the trade market right now, and one that's not but keeps having their name brought up. The two that are obviously on the trade market are Kyrie Irving and Carmelo Anthony. The third one is Kevin Love, and we're not really sure if he's being moved or not. You hear rumors about Kyrie going to New York, about Melo going to Cleveland, or Melo going to Houston, or Kevin Love going to Phoenix, or maybe even Portland. And Portland definitely wants to be involved in any of those trades. But which one of those three guys would you want to get your hands on right now for this season?
Well, to me, I think the one that makes the most sense is Carmelo Anthony. And I think it makes the most sense for a couple reasons. Not about to claim he's the best player available on that list by any stretch of the imagination, but I think that if you get Carmelo Anthony, it's the best situation because A, you can absolutely get him without giving up one of your big three. You don't have to give up Lillard, CJ, or Nurkic, which means you have a big four, and that is almost becoming essential if you want to be a contender in the NBA.
Right.
The reason you don't have to give up any of those guys is because Carmelo has, you know, as little trade value of those guys as possible because, A, he controls his own destiny. He has that no trade clause. And B, New York is just looking to essentially start over and build around Kristaps Porzingis. So, yes, they would love to get their hands on a CJ or somebody like that, but they know that that's completely unrealistic at this point. Whereas if you're trading Kyrie Irving, his trade value is also low because of the leaked information that he's requested a trade. But he's 25 years old in comparison to Carmelo, who is a declining 33. So I think that if you can get Carmelo, it's at a lower price, which makes it well worth it. Now, the other reason you go after Carmelo, and the reason I actually was a huge advocate of getting Carmelo Anthony to the Blazers, is because he's on a one-year deal. He is on a it's-my-time-to-prove-it deal. So if he comes to Portland, the Big Four succeeds, and he likes it, he can re-sign, and you now have your core set up for the next few years. If he comes to Portland, has a great year, proves he's still valuable, and bounces to the Lakers or wherever else, all of a sudden you have cleared a whole bunch of cap space, and you are now once again a player in free agency, or at least as much as Portland can be.
Right. Well, and, you know, I had up and down feelings about the potential of Carmelo coming to Portland. I know a lot of people were excited about the prospect of having a 10-time All-Star and one of the best scorers in the game joining CJ, Dame, and Nurkic. But to me, he's kind of a selfish player that, well, not kind of, you remove the kind of from that sentence and you have Carmelo in a nutshell. He's a selfish player. I'm not sure how he would gel with this locker room or with this team on the court. That was what made me the most nervous, is that the guy has, everywhere he's gone, he's been kind of a cancer to that team. And he fizzled out in New York after fizzling out in Denver. And so I was kind of down on the concept of him coming here. I agree that he'd be a great 1 year or 2 year deal that, you know, if you make him prove it for a year and he plays an amazing season and they get in deep in the playoffs, all is well and it's worth the money. And if he doesn't do that, it's a dump at the end of the season, you know, if they exercise the option. But if that doesn't happen and he wants to leave and he leaves on bad terms and he doesn't perform the way we want him to and he provides a negative impact on the team, to me, that's like the worst thing you could ask for in a trade like this.
Yeah, I think that's great perspective, and I don't think there's anything wrong about what you said. One thing that I will say is I think, you know, maybe this is just based off past experience and it doesn't translate nowadays, but Portland's locker room culture has been pretty excellent since the Trailblazers era.
True.
And that's not by accident. That is Paul Allen and his management staff getting squeaky clean guys. Now, I know Carmelo Anthony doesn't necessarily fall into that category, but he is a very different person than he has been in the past. He has become one of the biggest philanthropists in the NBA. He's a big social advocate. And I think that I think Portland would be a very good change of pace for him. Now, I don't know if he wants a change of pace that drastic, which means that if he's here and he's not motivated, yes, you definitely have all those issues that you get out. And even if he is motivated, you still have defensive issues if
right.
You bring him to the lineup. But to me, if you can make it happen, it's a risk worth taking. I just don't think it's going to happen because I think he is dead set on ending up with Chris Paul and James Harden in Houston.
So let's talk about that aspect of it. Portland has been rumored to be in part of a 3 or 4 team deal that would send Melo to Houston. But by doing so, you're basically helping your rival be better while making yourself just better at handling your checkbook, whereas you don't actually get the players you necessarily need. Now, if they were going to get Ryan Anderson and Trevor Ariza in a deal, I could support that full on because you get Ariza, who's a really good defensive player, kind of an upgrade at what Harkless brings to the table. But he can also, if we are able to keep Harkless, he can show Harkless how he plays his game and maybe help him out. And then you have Ryan Anderson, you can play at the four, who's a really good shooter. He's not the greatest defender, and he doesn't have a great all-around game, but he is a shooter. And you need someone that can play at the four for now. So that deal could work, but the problem is you do give Melo to Houston, who already has Chris Paul and James Harden, and a pretty good roster to boot. I'm not sure how running Mike D'Antoni's offense will work, because Carmelo's already tried that before and it didn't work very well, but he didn't have Harden at the time, and he also didn't have Chris Paul, so maybe that will be a difference.
If Portland jumps in on this deal as a facilitator, I think it signifies two things. I think one, it's an indication and a concession that Portland knows it's not going to be a contender in the next couple seasons. I think if they truly believed they could make a move to get to that point, they wouldn't help create another super team out west. So in doing so, I think they're saying, let's gather some assets. Let's continue building for the next run and let these teams at the top duke it out while we do that. The other thing I think it signifies, though, is that Portland was maybe never too hopeful that it was actually going to get Carmelo Anthony. I think if it had worked out, the team would have been thrilled and they would have done whatever it took to make it work. But, you know, I said all along, I think that Olshay making it clear, I'm using air quotes, making it clear that they had no interest in helping out the Rockets was really just a leverage play.
Right.
I think that in saying that, you make yourself a more important part of the deal and you all of a sudden can request more back. If Portland had said, sure, let's help this out, they could have gotten basically nothing in return, a second round draft pick or whatever, to make this a deal. But the fact that they fought it a little bit made national headlines. Everybody was talking about it from every national angle. I think all of a sudden the Blazers are a much more important part of the deal and they can take back better assets in return.
How did you like seeing Carmelo in a Brandon Roy jersey?
The Blazers have not yet retired that number, so
True.
It surely would have happened, but it was a perspective that I'm glad you brought up because I did think about that and didn't really hear anybody else talking about it.
That was, I remember when I first saw it, I was like, that jersey looks awfully familiar, and I had to look it up. I was like, yeah, that's B-Roy, that's the natural. You can't just give that to Carmelo. Maybe make him play a couple games as number 24 or something before you give him that number.
So you're saying it didn't look natural?
It didn't. Well played. No, it looked unnatural. It looked like something that I didn't want to have happen, and maybe that was why I was so against the trade, is that, you know, Carmelo's not a bad guy, and he doesn't have any major issues off the court. It's just he seems like a selfish player. He doesn't seem like a guy that's out to win now and do anything he can to make his team better. Doesn't mean that he's not doing that. It's just the perception is that's not what he's doing. So if he is doing that, he needs to work on making sure people are aware of it.
Yeah, and he's proven, or it's proven, that he's not a natural winner. He is not LeBron James, who's going to make people better. He's not Kobe Bryant, who's going to will a team to victory. He is just a very nice player who has, you know, superstar status because of how he played early in his career and the fact that he was always connected to LeBron James, even back in high school. I think that his, you know, perception has gone from, you know, something really great to something really not so great. And now I think he has a chance to rejuvenate his career, which is why I was kind of excited about the prospect of him coming here. But overall, like I said earlier, nothing you pointed to is incorrect. All of the things you mentioned are why he's a risk. I don't think you're going to have to worry about that because it shouldn't be happening. It's not going to happen.
Well, and you penned a really great article this week about John Canzano of 102.9 and Oregon Live talking about Carmelo and how his focus on his son and what a great dad he is and how focused he is on that. Do you think that keeps him in the East Coast or at least in the Midwest? And does that kind of rule out anybody on the West Coast, even if it is, you know, Golden State coming calling?
If you ask me, if Portland were a Golden State power, that conversation would have never come up. I don't doubt anything that was said in the article. I don't doubt anything about Carmelo Anthony's, you know, fatherhood. I don't know if you've caught any of these, but there are a lot of Instagram videos that go viral of Carmelo Anthony training with his son. And it's actually really nice to see because you see Carmelo, I think there's one in particular where they're sitting on a couch watching a basketball game and he's asking his son what he would have done in the situation. I think the situation was something as simple as the player on TV was in triple threat position so he could dribble, shoot, or pass, did a jab step, and then made the wrong decision. And so Carmelo was sort of quizzing his kid on what he would have done, why he would have done it. And it was just a very sort of, you know, intellectual discussion happening between a father and son that was a really, really nice, touching moment. I think a lot of that stuff does translate to that particular article. I think that there's a lot of things that are really nice about Carmelo that people don't really know and recognize. But if he really, truly wanted to be close to his son, he would demand a trade to Brooklyn.
Right.
He would demand a trade to Boston. He wouldn't even be thinking about Houston. And like I said, if the Blazers were in a better spot, I'm thinking that doesn't weigh into his decision as much.
So we're pretty close to running out of time, so I got to ask you a couple of really quick questions, and I just want to know your thoughts. What we're going to do is talk about a couple of potential mega trades that are on the horizon. Which one scares you the most, and which one would you like to see? If you're not a Blazer fan, you're just an NBA fan, which one do you want to see the most? So the first one is you swap Kyrie for Melo. So Kyrie goes to New York, and New York sends Melo to Cleveland. This is a straight-up trade. There's no draft picks, no role players, no secondary stars, just those two guys. Do you want to see that deal, or do you want to see Kyrie get dealt to Minnesota, and then Minnesota sends Andrew Wiggins back to Cleveland?
Oh, there's so many great storylines in both of those. I won't go into each and every single one of them, but there's obviously the LeBron-Carmelo connection. There's the Wiggins-Cleveland connection, which is amazing. I think from a pure entertainment standpoint, the one that I'd want to see the most is Kyrie Irving going to Minnesota.
Right.
I think that that truly puts them in the super team category. Now, from a Trailblazers perspective, that's probably the one you do not want to see, because if you're planning on fighting with the Timberwolves to get into the playoffs this year, or even just fighting for position around that sixth seed, that bolts them up. And now you have another super team out west to go along with the Warriors, the Spurs, and the Rockets. Not that the Spurs are a super team by definition, but they're just super duper every year. So not only do you have a team that you're competing with out west, but now you have a team that has jolted into that upper echelon.
So what if the alternative is Kyrie gets dealt to San Antonio for LaMarcus Aldridge and a draft pick? Does that deal scare you any less, seeing Kyrie getting teamed up with Kawhi Leonard?
It does. It scares me less in the sense that there's not another team out west to worry about. But I think that the Spurs become the consensus second best team. I think right now there's a bit of a debate between Houston and San Antonio, sort of the shiny new object versus the old reliable.
Right.
But I think if they get Kyrie somehow out of this, then they definitely become even more dangerous. You're just not having to compete with a new team, which I think is more feasible from a Trailblazers perspective.
Absolutely. Well, we're past our time, so we got to get going. But Bryant, awesome talking to you today. Really appreciate you coming on. Definitely have to have you back on again, and especially when all these trades get figured out, if they do, we'll have to have you on to talk us through how all that went down, because we trust your word above anybody. So thank you again for coming on, and we'll definitely have to have you on again soon.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And that's Bryant Knox of Oregon Sports News. Make sure you check out his work. I'm Casey Mabbitt. This has been Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. Another shameless plug for our network. Make sure you check out the band Liebecker at www.liebeckermusic.com. Check them out on Spotify. Check them out on iTunes. You can also check out Bryant and myself on Twitter. He's at Bryant Knox, and I am at Fireside Sports, at Fireside Radio SN. So feel free to figure out how to spell that one. We'll love to see you on there. Make sure you add us. We'll follow you back. Thank you and have a good night.